Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The New Statesman.
I'm Ido Vok, Europe correspondent at The New Statesman, and you're listening to World Review, a twice-weekly international news podcast. Every Thursday, we come together to unpack some of the most significant stories in world affairs, and every Monday, we interview a guest for their unique perspective and expertise. Today, I'm speaking to Andrius Kubilius, a former Prime Minister of Lithuania and a member for the European Parliament for the Conservative EPP group, about his experience growing up under Soviet rule, how to plan for a Russia after Vladimir Putin, and how the war in Ukraine could weaken the Russian regime. If we can start off with this article that you wrote for the Lithuania Tribune, you wrote a very detailed piece about, I suppose, prompted by the closure of the TV channel Dožd by Latvia, but I think more broadly, you were speaking about psychological complexes in the Baltics and perhaps in some Western countries, and I suppose a kind of psychological siloing of beliefs about Russia, prompted, of course, by the war. Could you just speak about your article and why you decided to write this piece?
I would say several reasons. First of all, really, no, even earlier, we were discussing back in Brussels, and we wrote one piece in a op-ed with Radek Sikorski, with us, members of European Parliament and some experts, on what we called on believers and non-believers in Russian democracy. And our feeling was, we do not have any kind of sociological estimation, but our feeling was that the majority in Europe are among non-believers, which is, for us, it's not good. Because there are several reasons why we think that we need to believe in the possibility of Russian democracy. And we need to help Russian Democrats to achieve that goal, which we see doors are opening for some kind of new possibilities with Ukrainian victory against Russia and possibilities of the transformation of Russia. It can go both ways. It can go in a wrong way with, I don't know, Prigozhin or Kadyrov coming into the power, or it can go into that way that Russia is transforming itself into more normal in a European type country. And that is our dream and our ambition, to have Russia as a normal neighbor, which for us in Lithuania, of course, that is very much important for our security reasons. Because we believe this historical truth that democracies are not fighting each other. So that's our very clear reason. And in order to achieve that goal, to help Russia in democratic transformation, first of all, we need, Europeans, we need to believe also that Russia can be, can transform itself. Of course, that job will be done by Russian Democrats, but we can help. Second reason, again, very clear, that if in European capitals, leaders would not believe in the possibility of Russian transformation after Putin will lose the war, and if they will be afraid of what can come after, if they will think that really Prigozhin or Kadyrov will come after Putin, and there is no chance for democracy to be established in Russia, then what we are afraid that support to Ukraine with weapons, will be not on that level which we would like to see, that the West would help Ukraine with such an amount of weapons which would allow Ukraine to win a decisive victory. So if the Western capitals, at least some of them, would not believe into scenario for Russia, if they will be afraid of turmoil in Russia, chaos in Russia, total collapse of Russia with all their nuclear weapons, which will lose their control, then we are afraid that this support to Ukraine will not be on that level which we would like to see. So those are two reasons why we are talking about possibility in Russia to have democracy and what the West needs to do. Now, I looked, and of course, this Doge story, it triggered again some kind of discussions as well, especially in our country now, which you can hear the same and also in Brussels or in all Europe, that Russia is not able to be a democracy, that Russians are not. They do not have this democratic mentality and so on and so on. And I simply went through all those, what I call in some ways, psychological problems on our side, that we are very easygoing into some kind of superficial understanding of what is happening in Russia. It's much more complex things, and we need to look into more detail into. And I was trying to put all the answers to all those most popular, what I call psychological complexes on our psychological narratives on our side.
I think one of the reasons that people are so willing to say that maybe this is a war of, it's not Putin's war, it's Russian's war, and the Russians are acquiescing to it, is that there really isn't very much grassroots and popular opposition to the war in Russia. The opposition has been crushed. Pretty much everyone is in exile, and the few prominent figures who have left are imprisoned. And there aren't mass rallies against the war. There were for some period, but not anymore. And you have a particularly interesting perspective, I think, because you obviously grew up during the Soviet occupation of Lithuania. And you talk in the piece about how even Lithuanians didn't dare to hold mass rallies against the Soviet Union, against Soviet rule, until perestroika, until Gorbachev's rule. Can you just talk a little bit about kind of your experience of growing up under an authoritarian or totalitarian system, and what it's actually like to oppose such a government?
You can hear in Lithuania even. All that Russian opposition, they are doing nothing. They should go back to Russia. They should take guns and they should fight against Putin regime and so on. Which for me, really, it does not look very, very rational and very sincere from our side. This is what I call sofa revolutionaries, that we are sitting on our nice sofas, drinking champagne and giving advice to those guys who are really persecuted by Russian regime. My point was very simple. If you look into our history, when we're saying to Russians that take guns and go, you know, to fight against Putin, it seems that we are saying also that we would fight. In your place, we would take, we would go, we would fight and so on. Because we are the heroes. We managed to achieve our democracy. We managed to achieve our, you know, independence. And that is why we can teach how to fight. So it's not a very objective approach. Because if you look into our history, yes, we are, after Second World War, we have, you know, underground military resistance with foreign brothers until 1953. Then we had, you know, some dissidents, we had some manifestations, you know, when one guy back in 1972, he burned himself in Kaunas protesting against the Soviet regime. But those were some way separate individual occasions. In general, during Brezhnev time, there was no big, you know, public, you know, opposition to Brezhnev regime. Young Lithuanians were mobilized to Soviet army. They were sent to Afghanistan or to Czechoslovakia to occupy, and nobody was protesting. And all the protests came out only when Gorbachev started perestroika. And when we learned that with Gorbachev, and people who are going into demonstrations will not be sent to prison, to Gulag, or whatever. So all our bravery, in some way, was connected with Gorbachev. So now in Russia, they do not have Gorbachev. They have, you know, Putin. And to teach people, go and fight when everybody knows that you will be sent to prison or you will be poisoned and so on, this is not for us to teach. We do not have such a bravery in our history, in our experience, which we can teach Russians. Go and fight. Because when we had similar situation with Brezhnev regime, we were not so brave. And that was very simple human reason. Nobody wanted to go to jail or to be sent to, you know, this psychiatric hospital or to be sent to Gulag or to lose its professional possibilities and so on. So that's my point was, let's not be those salon revolutionaries. Let's not teach from our sofas, you know, Russians how to fight, because in their place, if we would be in their place, perhaps that we would behave in a very similar way.
Wherever you are in the world,
if you're interested in global affairs,
you can subscribe to The New Statesman in digital, in print, or both from as little as £1 a week. That's 12 weeks for just £12.
That's €1 a week in Europe and just $2 a week in America.
Just go to www.newstatesman.com/podcast offer.
Hi, I'm Anoush, and I host the New Statesman podcast. Twice a week, we get under the skin of Westminster to help understand what's going on and what's going to happen next. We interview politicians, policymakers, and people on the front line to get you the full story behind the headlines. Plus, hear from our award-winning editorial team, including political editor Andrew Marr, to get to the bottom of what on earth is happening. Listen to the New Statesman podcast. You can subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
How should we trying to think about why there are these dynamics in Russia also leads us to thinking about a Russia after Putin, a de-Putinized Russia, a Russia that, as you said, is always going to be on the border with Lithuania, that is always going to be on the border with the European Union, is always going to be on the border with Ukraine. And of course, we have to think about how we can live with Russia, how maybe we can help Russia change from, of course, the country that it is today and the regime that rules Russia today. How do you think about this? How should we think and plan for a Russia after Putin, for a better democratic Russia?
I would say here are two stages if you look into, you know, future developments. The first one is really how to help, because the biggest instrument now which can open the doors for changes in Russia is, of course, Ukrainian victory. So the question is how to support Ukraine, and that is what really very much depends on the Western political will. Because, and it was during this year, or during, let's say, not this year, but from the very beginning of the war, Ukrainians managed to show that with the Western military equipment and with their bravery, they are much stronger than Russian military forces. And everything, when the war can be finished, everything depends on military equipment which the West can deliver to Ukraine. But in order to have stronger military deliveries, again, we need to convince the West that after Putin, after Russia will lose the war, there are possibility for positive scenario. And that is why we need to start to work now even also on those positive scenarios. There are several options which we need to target at the same time. We need to, at least I am believing into some kind of historical tendencies of development. I see that democracy slowly, but is moving in the eastern part of the European continent, including Belarus, including Russia. So we need to look how we can help, you know, that spread to go on. And here again, besides Ukrainian victory, it's very important what the West can do and what EU can do. It's really to create an example of success of Ukraine, not only with military victory and not only with reconstruction after the war, but also with integration towards EU, with modernization of Ukrainian economy. And that can be an inspiration for Russian people to see that really there is a possibility to have a decent, normal life in this part of Europe. If you are abandoning totally stupid dreams about restoration of empire, and if you are moving into some kind of normalization of your country, and you are creating normal conditions for your country. Then second, what we need to do and what we are trying to do, we need to start to work with Russian opposition, with their intellectuals, with liberal intellectuals, starting to prepare and starting to speak loudly what kind of relationship we are going to establish in between of EU, for example, and democratic Russia. What are we going to offer? Now, perhaps, now, if for Ukraine we can offer membership in EU, I am not thinking that we can offer Russia, you know, membership in EU. It's a little bit too big a challenge. But to offer, for example, free trade, visa-free, things like that, to show ordinary Russian people that we are ready to work together with democratic Russian authorities in order to provide all the possibilities to create normal conditions of life in Russia. That is what we can try to do. And that is very important, to send messages even now to Russian people that, look, after Putin or in post-Putin Russia, there is possibility to have a normal life. And that is what the West is ready to deliver. And such kind of reality to work with democratic Russia would be very important after the change, which I hope will come into Russia and with positive consequences, because when democracy is coming, there are two major challenges, at least what we learned also in from our history. One challenge is really how to make that change during one night. There are different scenarios how democracy can come into Russia or in other countries. But usually we are concentrating ourselves only on that change, and we are forgetting that young democracy in such countries, especially like Russia, they are facing big challenges to stabilize themselves. Because a lot of different emotions are starting to appear in society, a lot of nostalgia to the past. Democracy usually brings a lot of big reforms which are not very popular and so on. And that is what had happened with Russia back in Yeltsin time. Democracy failed. Because people were really upset with all the changes. They haven't possibility to see the benefits of that coming, and a lot of nostalgia to the Soviet Union, to Soviet past. That was what Putin was very good in using that. And that is what we have now. So we need to learn also lessons that this, our relations, our strategy towards democratic Russia and how to democracy in Russia to be stabilized will be very important also.
I think listening to these arguments, I think I can see the logic behind them, but it seems so far removed from the situation we are at the moment, talking about visa-free travel for Russians to the EU. This seems so fantastical that given the situation we are at the moment, do you think it's possible to convince Europeans, to convince even Russians that we should aim for closer relations, we should aim for friendly relations? Because at the moment, obviously, the relations are the worst they've been in post-war history, pretty much.
I would say there is one very important point. When I am talking about those friendly relations like visa-free or free trade, we are talking about totally different Russia, democratic Russia, after the change, not friendly relations with Putin regime. So that's one most important condition. And for us, it will be very important really to understand if after the change, Russia is really becoming a democracy. It will not be enough for just to have some kind of election, because no, elections can bring Prigozhin into power. No, that's very simple. So that's why we put one paper together with Russian intellectual leaders like Sergei Guriev from Paris, you know, Vladimir Milov from Navalny team, and also with some European experts. We put a piece exactly on this, on EU strategy of relation with democratic Russia, where we have said exactly that this is very important for us to start to discuss. We elaborated exactly how we shall recognize if Russia is really becoming democracy or not. The first condition will be really abandoning of all the aggressive policies towards the neighbors. So that's what we started to discuss. We are now trying to broaden our discussion, and we hope that we can involve also in a more formal way EU institutions to prepare some kind of strategy. And of course, for time being, when you see Russia, when you see all those atrocities, you know, what Russian army is perpetrating in Bucha or other places, to speak about much more friendly relations with Russia, well, of course, we're talking about different Russia, but people are quite difficult to convince them that it can come. People are evaluating the situation more based on their emotions. And when people see what's done, what kind of crimes were done in Ukraine, of course, there is very little space for rational evaluation. But that is our task. And in Russia, in our region, things can change very rapidly. Now, when you are not believing that can happen, for example, what had happened with Gorbachev perestroika. Before that perestroika, nobody was believing that things can go in such a way. You know, it looked like that the Soviet Union, as Andropov calls those old guys, and that it will continue in such a way. And suddenly from somewhere, okay, that was deliberate, you know, action to start reforms of Soviet Union. Even Andropov was looking into that. Nobody was thinking that the reforms can bring the outcome that Soviet Union will pull out. Or let's say another example, a recent example, Belarus and Lukashenko. In 2020, despite the fact that we are neighbors with Belarus, and we had a lot of relationship with Belarus in spring, in the first half of 2020, we were not foreseeing any kind of those events which started to happen with Svetlana Tikhanovskaya and also big, you know, street protests and so on. Things can come and change in a very rapid way. Okay, Lukashenko managed to stop with guns, you know, all that revolution in Belarus. But, you know, first of all, I see it as an evidence that when we see, and it looks like that nothing can happen in Russia or in Belarus at all, so things can go in a very different way, in a very rapid way. So we don't know when it can happen, what can, you know, how it can go, but let's be ready for a totally different scenario.
So Putin and Lukashenko's power is a lot more fragile than maybe people think, and we need to be ready to respond when it collapses.
Absolutely. And I think that Putin, you know why? I am trying to ask myself the question. So why Putin decided to go into that stupid war, criminal and so on, but which is threatening his regime? And I think that somebody is saying, okay, Putin was feeling that he is very strong, that he can take Kiev during 3 days and so on. In my view, really Putin decided to go to the war because he was starting to feel that his regime is becoming weaker and weaker. And especially the Belarusian example, for him was really a clear signal, red light to that. Things can go into very in that way, which will destabilize his regime. And that is why he decided, let's go, let's start this war. Let's show the people some kind of other issues and so on.
Andrus Kubilius, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks a lot.
This has been World Review from the New Statesman. You can read all our international coverage at newstatesman.com. If you've enjoyed this episode, please tell a friend and leave us a nice review. Our producer has been Adrian Bradley. I'm Ido Volk. Thanks for listening, and until next time.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Freddie here. I want to tell you about a new way you can support the New Statesman's independent journalism. Every morning I send out Morning Call, our daily newsletter covering everything you need to know about British politics. It's free to sign up, plus for just £3 a month, you'll get a recommended daily piece of ours sent to you in full, plus exclusive polling analysis from Ben Walker, a weekly update from Will Dunn, and our featured piece on Sundays. If you enjoy this podcast, you'll love Morning Call. Head to morningcall.substack.com and subscribe now.